So the study focused on this particular burial site in Peru. Can you talk about what you found there?
Sure. Unfortunately, the site is in the middle of a plowed field that has been cultivated for who knows how long. I mean, certainly generations, the community that Dr. Haas worked with, Muyufa City, they cultivated that land as long as they could remember. Dr. Haas, Randy Haas, who, you know, he's the lead author on the article, Dr. Haas made the find and he did the excavation. The remains were in very poor condition, which makes sense because they're nearly 9,000 years old. But when he did the excavation, there was a clear concentration of these stone tools. He said, this really looks like a hunter's kit. You know, it's got all the tools. It's got projectile points. It's got scraping tools. It's got, you know, napping tools. It's got everything you need to be a hunter on this landscape. When I did the analysis, I said, boy, everything on this individual, although the remains are in poor condition and there's so few elements, this individual looks like a female.
So after finding this site in Peru, you went and kind of looked through the literature for other burial sites where you knew if it was a male or a female there. Tell me what you discovered.
It really did require quite a bit of combing through the literature to identify those, first of all, just burials that date to that time period in the first place, and then narrowing it down to those few that certainly appear that they had, you know, again, something similar, a hunting kit with them or evidence that they were potential burials of hunters. And so that, again, the individuals were buried with the objects to give us the clue that they probably, you know, that was, they were related to that profession in some way. On average, it turns out there's almost as many female hunter burials as there were males.
We don't usually think of big game hunting as an activity done equally by men and women in ancient times. Why do you think that is?
I think it has to do with hunting practices and our preconceived notions about hunting practices. And one of the things that some of my other research sort of points to the idea in later foraging communities among later hunters, where it turns into a prestige behavior. So hunting becomes less of a group activity and more of an individual activity. Whereas prior to this, and so what part of the argument is that especially among these very small communities that were relatively mobile, that were focused on these big game, you know, it's not like you're gonna come run up to a mammoth and jab it with a spear and it's gonna die. The idea is you really need a group hunting strategies.
So hunting at the time would have been a very collaborative activity.
Right. And so if that's the case, if you really need the whole community out there, there's no reason that women can't be part of it.
Right.
And in addition, you know, the classic argument has a lot to do with reproductive responsibilities. But truthfully, you know, if you've given birth, you can easily hand your child off to a grandparent. And you can actively run around and help do the hunting. And so the idea of the reproductive argument just doesn't quite fly as a restriction in behavior of women in the past.
Do you think this research implies that other activities we think of as typically male or female, like childcare, we should actually revisit that?
I think so. I mean, to me, that's sort of the big take-home message, is that we can't automatically make assumptions. We can't just blindly apply the modern ethnographic record to the past.
Jim Watson, thank you so much for speaking with me.
No problem. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.